Welcome to Grimshaw Speakers, a partnership between the Grimshaw Club and Beaver Sound. We bring you conversations with exceptional individuals discussing the issues of our times. Today, we are joined by Mitch Hayes, a former LSE IPE master's student and the founder of the China Signal, a newsletter covering developments in the Sino-Latin American relationship. Over recent years, China has enhanced its political and economic involvement in Latin America, yet its deeper implications remain poorly understood or largely unaddressed. From donating mobile hospitals to Argentina's military, to the Chinese acquisition of Peru's largest electricity company, to loans to Ecuador from the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, China evidently has defined its presence in the continent, which calls for analytical attention. Fortunately, Mitch is with us today precisely to help understand China's role in Latin America. So thanks for joining us today, Mitch.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. It's great to be here.
Great. So the first thing I wanted to address before we get into the intricacies of the issue are the characteristics of the Sino-Latin America relationship. So could you briefly, for our listeners, go over what type of economic activity is most prevalent and in which countries, and equally importantly, what does the political relationship between the two look like?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think if you had to put the defining characteristics down to two core concepts, it's really driven by economic necessity and then political validation. And if you sort of really look at it from the Chinese side, within their own political system, you know, what are their core interests and what drives that, and therefore the relationship with the region. Obviously, the Chinese Communist Party wants to remain in power, and for Xi Jinping, for himself, he wants to keep himself in power. That means a few things contribute to that, but it's really dominated by continuing to have sustained economic growth within China itself to foster a strong national identity for the Chinese population, and then also to create a healthy and comfortable living environment. And Latin America has increasingly been seen as an important contributor to those three things in particular. You see, Latin America is known as a continent of vast natural resources, and so it's important to maintain China's economic growth in that sense, whether it's copper from Chile, oil from Venezuela traditionally, and even from newer sources such as Suriname as well, and grain and beef from Brazil. But also you're seeing development in newer areas for cleaner technologies as well, where China is seeing Latin America is increasingly as a partner for critical mineral exports, and Argentina has been in the news about that recently, as well as being a new market for the export of clean electric vehicles into Latin America as well. And we've seen that with China's own company BYD in signing some contracts for fleets of electric buses in Bogota and Colombia. The clean energy as well. I mean, it's a really interesting developing theme for the region. China has its own wealth of critical minerals and sort of rare earth metals within its own borders, but to extract those without sort of proper safeguards and environmental regulations is a very environmentally dirty process, and it's not without controversy and potential social consequences and sort of consequences of political risk as well. And so by China looking to partner with some of these countries in Latin America that are particularly rich in these resources, whether it's sort of Argentina or Bolivia or Chile or other countries, there's sort of a darker aspect to that as well, in that they can sort of offshore some of that environmental cost and with it some of that own domestic political risk. And then I think, you know, if you're going to fostering Chinese national identity and pride, Latin America is a great region for exporting China's sort of official narrative of successful economic development under their own unique sort of political model. And that has receptability in the region and within the region, some of the region's leaders as well, who have a bit more of an autocratic bent, shall we say. And then diplomatically as well, it's Latin America's a really interesting region of the world because it's particularly concentrated of countries who continue to recognize Taiwan and not Beijing. And so there are 9 out of 15 countries globally who recognize Taiwan that are still in Latin America and Caribbean. Obviously, that's a long-term interest of Beijing to reunify Taiwan with the mainland and working on these countries and the sort of diplomatically peeling them off into Beijing's favor is always an interest for Beijing as well. And then if I might just quickly just say sort of on the Latin American side, from their perspective, the region as a whole has a chronic need for infrastructure investment, and China has shown itself for 2 decades to be a very interested and willing funder for infrastructure projects, whether it's officially through the Belt and Road or sort of outside of those guidelines as well. And then sort of the flip side of the political side as well is for Latin American leaders. China is often seen as a practical partner that can be used for political means as well, vis-a-vis the United States as well. So it serves a lot of political and sort of economic objectives.
Right. So lots of points coming there, which I'll just stem off to some other questions as well that came up. But the one that I wanted to address first was the point you were bringing about how Latin America is very receptive to China's project abroad and to that project of strengthening its national identity. So what has been hitting the headlines, or at least very prominently did so last year with Latin America, was its receding growth. So the World Bank, if you see the figures, it's been on constant decline for the last couple of years. So in terms of China, what are the implications of Chinese investment? Because like you said, there's, you know, political elites throughout the continent that have more authoritarian tendencies. So, you know, being exposed to this success of economic growth from China and attracting that investment, do you think there will be some sort of incentive to shift towards a more authoritarian developmentalist type of arrangement throughout Latin America?
Yeah, it's difficult to sort of generalize, but it's quite possible. You know, you've seen basically some leaders in Latin America that almost seem a bit seem to think democracy is a bit of an unnecessary extravagance or a bit of a bother and shouldn't get in the way of economic development. That's certainly been not as so overtly said from within Beijing and their own model of development, but that's essentially been the course that they have followed. So it will be interesting to see in the coming years, like you said. No region has been hit further or harder in terms of the health impact of the pandemic and then the economic impact than Latin America. So it will have a particularly long recovery cycle, and people talk about, and the World Bank talks about sort of this lost decade, and it's really tragic to think of. And naturally there will be sort of political economic consequences from that. And China's well positioned to further increase its footprint, and I can talk about that a bit more as well, and to be deepen itself as a political and economic partner in the region.
Mm. All right. So to continue to bounce off some of the points as well, is So like you mentioned, diplomatically, there's been quite a strong relationship between the two. I mean, the other day, kind of just for fun, I was Googling when diplomatic relations between the major countries, at least, have started with the PRC. So with Mexico, we see that start in 71, Brazil 74, Argentina 72. So that at least the diplomatic foundations are there. But at one point, would you say there was kind of this watershed point where people started to notice a Chinese presence in Latin America?
Yeah, that's interesting, because you're right. The diplomatic relationship does have a quite a few decades to it. I wouldn't say it's been particularly deep or strong though, until more recently. And what has that turning point been? I think the 2008 financial crisis was a real turning point in China's perception of itself in the world, and that also flowed across to the region of Latin America as well. And then also with Xi Jinping coming to power in 2013, and when he started to assert sort of a more confident and sort of almost muscular posture through the world, and that received a lot of attention in other regions, probably first in Africa and then in Southeast Asia as well, and then increasingly in Latin America. I think people really started to sit up and pay attention as the economic relationship really started to evolve rapidly through the first two decades of the 2000s. But then with this sort of this tightening geopolitical environment, particularly in the last decade, and triggered by those two sort of turning points that I mentioned earlier. And nothing now is really perceived with as far as China's economic interests go without a geopolitical lens as well. And so a lot more people are paying attention to that.
Okay, that's interesting that you bring in the 2008 financial crisis as a turning point, because obviously that was a point where a lot of people really began to question how successful at least the Bretton Woods institutions had been, and how successful this neoliberal world order order had been. Especially in Latin America, where you see the dominance of neoliberalism and the Washington Consensus, especially after the so-called lost decade of the 80s. So yeah, that's very interesting insight. And the next thing as well that I think is, well, a necessary thing to bring up in the midst of the global pandemic are, what type of opportunities does COVID-19 offer for the relationship between China and Latin America? Are we gonna see a deepening of that relationship? Is there gonna be perhaps a shift in economic behavior of China towards Latin America?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it could well be another turning point in the relationship as well. I think you've seen China exercise to the best of their abilities a lot of efforts to show some soft power and to broaden the relationship with the region beyond just simple trade and investment. You're seeing, and I think we'll see more of, a growing political engagement, not just at a government-to-government level, but at a societal level as well. I think through 2020, we've seen a greater export dependence from Latin American countries to China, and we'll see an evolving kind of investment pattern. And I can quickly dig into those a little bit more as well. We certainly saw through beginnings of the pandemic, around about a year ago now, a lot of, you know, mask diplomacy in the region and donations of medical equipment. And in dollar terms, I mean, it's relatively modest. This recent report came out that showed it was around about $215 million donated in this kind of aid by China officially to the region in 2020. It's not necessarily significantly more or less than what other countries donated to the region as well. But they certainly made efforts to publicize that very heavily. And now you're seeing a transition from that, less from donating aid and pure medical equipment to a shift to providing vaccines. And that is really, I think, hitting on a sweet spot with the material needs of Latin America at the moment. We've just said how heavy the toll has been as a health toll and as an economic cost in the region. They desperately need vaccines, as does the rest of the world, but there is short supply of vaccines from the Western world, the US and Europe. And really, the only major alternative to that is China itself. So I think that is all sort of helping to sort of normalize the China's presence in the region beyond just pure sort of investment and economic engagement. And that's going to continue as well. Vaccines, as I understand it, won't just be sort of a one-off process with variants and other things emerging. That will be an ongoing relationship as well. And so there's an opportunity there for China to sort of really settle itself as a provider of those types of goods in the region. I'm not sure if it's sort of winning over hearts and minds just yet as a successful soft power strategy. I think, like I said, again, it's just starting to normalize more China's presence and in the region, which ultimately will start to win over hearts and minds and have more soft power value going forward. And you've seen that through their growing engagement at the sort of subnational level as well, whether it's with state or sort of regional governments, even sort of at the city level as well. So we're seeing that kind of engagement to roll out and to grow. On the sort of economic side, the trends of Latin American exports increasingly going to China and the trading relationship growing through the 2000s was really accelerated even more in 2020. And so what I think we're starting to see is actually something that I saw myself and studied in the Australian context as well, is that there are political economic consequences of that. There are interest groups and sectors and industries that benefit from that relationship, and they rationally work to make that trade and investment relationship strong and friendly between their country and China. Even if that comes at the expense of glossing over or sort of managing political issues that might be more controversial, right? So I think we're going to start to see that become a bit more of a complicated kind of space, especially with pressure from the US as well in the coming years. And just finally on an investment kind of side, we're seeing China start to shift its strategy a little bit. There traditionally was a lot of investment from China's policy banks, China Development Bank, China Export Import Bank, for these sort of mega projects. Again, a recent report that came out this week from Boston University and Inter-American Dialogue showed that was literally zero. Loans were zero from those two banks in 2020. A lot of that's pandemic related, but a lot of that too is how we're seeing a transition and in the economic relationship. Chinese companies are now more well established in the region, and increasingly they're looking to partner with commercial banks, Chinese or local, and sort of form different types of partnerships, local public-private partnerships and things like that. And so we're seeing the financial arrangement starting to shift and evolve and get a little bit more complex, I guess.
Yeah. So definitely there's, you know, a shift in the economic relationship further. China's embedding itself a lot more deeply throughout the region as well. And the point you were making about winning the hearts and minds as well, like obviously that's questionable, but it also leaves me thinking, you know, seeing how some countries are optimistically stepping outside the pandemic a lot more quicker than others, We've seen that at least Latin America will take some time to, well, a while longer to recover, and China might help that be a bit quicker. But it's interesting to see how it's becoming a lot more normalized. And while you mentioned the US, and obviously that's something that also needs to be talked about, because there's been such a polar change in the attitude of the White House with the incoming Biden administration. So where does the US fit in all of this? I mean, how does it interpret the Chinese involvement throughout the continent?
Yeah, well, I mean, from the US's side, the tone, I think, of US's engagement with China certainly has changed, even in the few sort of short months since the new administration took office. But really, the underlying dynamics remain the same. Domestically in the US, there is still a strong bipartisan political consensus to resist China globally, and that includes in the region, Latin America. And there's still the broader sort of systemic dynamics at play that didn't sort of magically shift on January 20, right? So that's the sort of the broader tone. And in the region, we saw through the end of the Trump administration statements from Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, and some of the other officials really quite overtly calling Latin American countries to resist China's overtures, which were subsequently criticized by a lot of Latin Americans as having a lack of opportunity elsewhere, including from the US. So I think this pattern will kind of continue. The US geostrategically is very sensitive to rivals and competitors staking a really strong presence south of them in Latin America. And that's been the case throughout history, through the Cold War with the Soviet Union, even going back to World War I, of course, with Germany and some of their efforts to influence up through Mexico and elsewhere in Latin America. Those sort of dynamics and sensitivities remain because of just pure geography. But I think what we've seen and what we will see with the Biden administration is that the tone changes. There's more of at least an effort made for multilateral engagement and more respect for alliances and partnerships. And I think that will sort of come to show through Latin America as well. But it remains to be seen if tone is sufficient, right, to overcome some of these material constraints of what we've just spoken about. Latin America economically is hurting. They need investment, they need economic growth, and they need vaccines and help to overcome the public health consequences of it as well.
Right. Yeah. So it's going to be a matter of seeing how much words translate into action. So that actually brings me to the last point as well. It's just about the future of that relationship, especially in a post-pandemic world. But I mean, other than perhaps some sort of U.S. challenge to Chinese presence in Latin America, what other challenges do you foresee for the political and economic relationship between the two, especially because in Latin America, 2021 is a pretty big year, speaking in terms of elections?
Mm. It is, and it's also a pretty big year as well, or 2 years within China as well. And I think that shouldn't be ignored. Just looking from that perspective, the Chinese Communist Party will be celebrating their 100th anniversary this July. Xi Jinping is certainly positioning himself for a third term in power as well. And then you have some big opportunities for them to sort of enhance their reputation through things like the Winter Olympics in 2022. And that will certainly moderate the the engagement and the methods that China engages the region and more broadly as well. I think they'll be a little bit more risk averse and shy away from sort of mega projects, which might give them a lot of sort of political risk exposure and blowback risk from their own domestic population. I think they've become very wary of not showing Beijing, not showing themselves to be caring more about the rest of the world than their own population, because they've certainly economically recovered and managed the pandemic response, at least after the first outbreak, with some success, but those challenges remain. And so that's why I think I'll see a little bit more of a nuanced and moderated engagement over the next sort of 12 months with sort of really high profile banner projects. And I think they'll just be really waiting to see what the outcome is of some of these elections as well in Latin America, knowing that those real material needs that we just spoke about will remain regardless of who's in power. And that's an opportunity to obviously continue to deepen ties.
Right. So that's all very interesting. I mean, it's definitely bringing Latin America back into the conversation. I mean, something that always irks me a little bit is that Latin America has been denominated as the forgotten continent. So it's interesting to see how it's shifting back into big international debates. And yeah, I mean, thank you so much for all your insight. I mean, there's so much to dig in that Sino-Latin America relationship, and whether Latin American schools need to start teaching Mandarin, well, that's yet to be seen, I guess. But yeah, no, thank you so much for being here with us and for all the insight.
Thank you so much, Fernanda. Thanks for having me.